great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Big sudden rainstorms can overwhelm wastewater treatment systems, and they can wash large amounts of pollutants directly into our lakes and streams. But fortunately, there's a technology in place that can address these large storm events, and it's pretty cool. I can't wait to talk more about it with our guests. It's been developed and used, utilized right here in Wisconsin, and with us, Paige Peters, founder and chief technology officer of Rapid Radicals Technology. It specializes in treating wastewater at overflow points and in disaster relief situations. It is such a cool technology, and I hope you'll join the conversation as we move along today. How well does the wastewater treatment system in your community handle big rain events and flooding? What questions do you have about this new technology designed to remove contaminants from overflows? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Paige Peters, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Hi, Larry. Great to be here.
Tell us about how this all came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's exciting to get to chat with you today, Larry. And I love an opportunity to talk about wastewater treatment, and especially tell a little bit more about the story of the origin of Rapid Radicals technology. I founded the company in 2016 to commercialize my graduate research that I started at Marquette University in Milwaukee in 2015 with my academic advisor, Dr. Dan Zittimer. And the story actually goes back 5 years prior to 2010. So in July of 2010 in Milwaukee, we had these insane, what we would call 500-year storm event, which sounds like a term used to describe the frequency of a storm, but it's actually used to describe the severity of a storm.
Yeah.
So this massive 500-year storm event occurred in July of 2010 in Milwaukee and much of southeastern Wisconsin. And a lot of people's basements flooded because of it. And one of those basements was that of my advisor, Dr. Dan Zittimer, who's still a professor at Marquette. And he thought, you know, there's got to be some engineering solution that we can develop to resolve the challenge of either sewer overflows, which is when untreated sewage goes into lakes, rivers, streams, and oceans and seas, or people's basements, because our infrastructure is all connected. And around that same time is when the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District had announced this goal of zero sewer overflows and basement backups by 2035. So the combination of those two things got him thinking and ultimately led us to submitting a proposal for industry university collaborative research funded starting in 2015 to develop this high rate wastewater treatment system that can meet discharge permit requirements per the Clean Water Act in less than 30 minutes compared to the 8 to 14 hours it usually takes for that treatment to occur. And that meant that we could do something in a small footprint, and it would be appropriate for urban areas like Milwaukee, like Chicago, a lot of cities that have combined sewer systems that deal with these overflows where stormwater and sanitary sewage are conveyed in the same pipe. And I started that research in 2015, hit proof of concept for this 30-minute detention time in 2016. And I'll never forget the moment when Dr. Zittimer looked at me and said, "You should start a company." And I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded like a grand adventure. And here we are 9 years later. We're a team of four nearly full-time employees. We've scaled the technology from 14 milliliters, so this tiny petri dish in the lab, to a full-fledged product in a 45-foot shipping container that can treat a capacity of up to 10,000 liters. So we scaled it about 9 orders of magnitude over the course of the last 9 years.
It is an amazing story, and there's a great video that I watched about the whole process, and I loved the whole thing. So So what's the talk about the technology in the first place? I was trying to wrap my head around how do you take all this water? How do you get all the water itself in order to deal with it? And then what happens to the water once you have it?
Sure. So broadly speaking, our sewer systems are, you know, made up of, like I said, in combined sewer systems, you've got sanitary sewage and stormwater running in the same pipe. Most of those cities still have, like, I'll keep using Milwaukee, obviously, as an example, just sure. where we're located. Also stormwater that collects off the streets and goes straight into rivers. Also separate sewage that comes from residential commercial buildings and goes straight to the treatment plant. And all of those, that network of pipes is like a whole city that lives underneath the city. And you don't often think about it unless something goes wrong. So it's good to have opportunities to talk about the good things that all these wastewater treatment facilities do. When there aren't major storm events or when there isn't sort of an emergency situation. But ultimately, this is a very massive infrastructure that exists underneath our feet all the time, constantly moving water and keeping it, the dirty water away from us as humans and bringing clean water to us as well. That infrastructure is really important. And the way that we can implement our technology, we often see it for cities in two ways. So if you you go on our website, wraparadicals.com, you'll see the trailerized version of our system. And ultimately that's something that you can put out in a system, in a sewer shed at the locations where these overflows occur, which in Milwaukee, there's 170 outfalls. And those outfalls were designed to allow water to essentially be relieved from the system to
go somewhere,
to avoid going into people's basements. So you can put it at those locations where those overflows occur, but you can also implement something like this in a small square footprint at a treatment plant. So in Milwaukee, we have two centralized treatment facilities, but they're all in urban areas. So real estate is pretty important, especially along the water. So we're always looking for opportunities to implement in places where utilities are stressed for space and where we know that it could have the greatest impact. And sometimes the greatest impact is out in what we would call the sewer shed. So out in that area that's off, you know, rivers and such, so that it keeps the waterways safe as the gathering place that they should be.
Our guest, Paige Peter, founder and chief technology officer of Rapid Radicals Technology. And Radicals, we'll get more into the whole business about radicals, but there's not some, I don't know what you'd call it, some long-haired person who is creating all kinds of ruckus. It's not that kind of radical at all. Oh, you can join in. Questions or comments, I hope you will. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Paige Peters talking with us about her company, Rapid Radicals Technology, excuse me. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Maybe we should go right to the company name, Rapid Radicals, and how it came about.
Yeah, so that answers the other question of what is the technology, what actually is the technology. From a high-level perspective, it's a combination of two high-rate treatment technologies. And the first technology is something that we want to take out solids really, really quickly on. So solids, it sounds like exactly what you think it is, but there's lots of very cost-effective ways to remove solids from any sort of wastewater stream. So we use a filtration technology or clarification to take out solids quickly, which brings down some organics and ultimately makes the water a lot cheaper to treat with our system that uses an ozone-based advanced oxidation process. Bear with me, listeners. An advanced oxidation process is characterized by the formation of something called the hydroxyl radical. A hydroxyl radical is one of the strongest oxidants known to science. So the more you produce, and the faster you produce them, the quicker your treatment can be and the smaller your footprint can be. They non-selectively break down lots of different types of organics, but we essentially rapidly produce radicals hence the name rapid radicals. And that second process of oxidation also achieves disinfection. So we're also inactivating and disinfecting harmful bacteria and viruses from our water. So we're really targeting that solids, organics oxidation, and then getting rid of those pathogens that that obviously are in our wastewater that we want to make sure don't wind up in our lakes and rivers.
So how do you make the radicals?
Our system is an ozone-based process. So I'm sure we've all heard of ozone in different capacities, but it's a strong oxidant that's generated on site. So we have ozone generators that essentially apply an electrical current to a stream of oxygen and break that oxygen into singlet oxygen, turn it back into O3 from O2 to O1 to O3. and by applying that to a proprietary catalyst that we're developing, we can cause that ozone to break down into hydroxyl radicals really quickly. And that's what allows us to do this really rapid treatment time. Like I said before, we can go from up to 14 hours down to less than 30 minutes. So we have a 20 times faster treatment time in 95% less space.
Wow. So let's say, how would, tell me how this would work. You know that there is a 10-inch rainfall coming. How do you go about, and you're working with, let's assume Milwaukee again. There's an event coming, or what? How does that whole process work?
Yeah, for any utility, there's obviously a huge decision-making process that goes on when you know a big rainstorm's coming, what we would call a wet weather event. And with our technology, because as I mentioned, it's an ozone-based system, it's chemical oxidation, but the chemical is generated on site. So you can really quickly start up that system. Let's say you know that storm is coming, the system can be turned on remotely and started up within 10 minutes. So that by the time that water reaches the part of that sewer, the sewer shed, or reaches wherever in the system this technology is deployed, you can be treating water as soon as it arrives. So it can come through the pipe, it can come to the treatment plant, it can be pumped out of a well, if you will. But because of the chemical oxidation aspect of it, you can leave it idle when you don't need it, and then you can turn it on and be treating water as quickly as you need to. And that's a big difference from what conventional treatment systems use, which is biological. And biological has a lot of value, and there's a lot of resources you can recover from our wastewater stream, and biological treatment helps us do that in many ways. But it is something that needs to be constantly maintained and usually takes around 6 hours to do that treatment with the biological system. So our departure from that is what allows us to have something that can start up really quickly, that can sit idle as long as it needs to, and can ultimately achieve the same goals as our conventional treatment systems. So we're kind of in this phase now of talking to a lot of utilities and understanding, how do you want to interact with a technology like this? Do you want it to be on your site? Do you want it to be out somewhere in the sewer shed? Do you want it to be remotely deployable so that you can, you know, look at your computer and hit the start button? Do you want to have to interact with it in some capacity? There's a lot of questions to ask when you start looking at what we call decentralized treatment.
And I was thinking about the older, the treatment plants that we have. I mean, they go back, a lot of them go back quite a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the water that's going through the systems now, I'm guessing that there's a huge difference in the makeup of the things that are in the water as compared to 50 years ago.
It's a great point. It's a combination of there being different things in the water because we keep creating things that we don't properly dispose of or don't know what to do with. So there are a lot more things in our water, but we are also capable of, in our wastewater, we're also capable of measuring a lot more things than we could before. And part of addressing any concern of any type, inside engineering, outside engineering, sociology, you name it, part of solving any problem is properly quantifying and understanding that problem to start. So while part of us is understanding there are different things in our water and our wastewater now, because we as humans consume things differently than we did 50 years ago. We also have this quantitative and qualitative ability to understand more of what's in our water. And that, as engineers, is what helps me to then be able to say, now that I know what's in the water, I can figure out how to take it out, and I can figure out how to make these water streams safe as it leaves our system.
So you can take out, I'm thinking of everything from, you know, pills, Oxycontin, or whatever it might be. The capability is there to eliminate the, you know, they're no longer in pill form. They're part of the water system. They've broken down, and you can work on that.
Yeah, that's also one of the benefits of a chemical oxidation system, is that it is capable of breaking down some of those. We would call them, well, the pharmaceuticals, it's its own category of things that we can quantify and can use chemical oxidation to break down. It's considered a form of advanced treatment because it's a bit above what a conventional system includes. But it's an important thing, you know, to take out of the water. There's been a lot of quantitative work done to understand the different quantities of these compounds in all of our water bodies. And then again, the other side of it is being able to find the right technology that's the good fit for removing things like ibuprofen, other pharmaceuticals that are in our water. And once those things get into a soluble form, which is typically what happens when people perhaps either flush them out of their systems or flush them down the toilet, which, here's the PSA not to flush your prescription medicine down the toilet.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, it's in the stream, and it's something that as engineers and as folks working in the space that we want to be able to address.
Matt in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Thank you for having this engaging show. I just got two quick questions for your guests. The first is, if they are looking at kind of design efficiencies when systems are first developed, specifically in urban areas, that where you can incorporate this type of technology just as part of a system. And secondly, thinking about non-point source pollution. Streams in the forest, right, that are, you know, they've got high levels of whatever it is, either it's nitrogen or different things going into the streams. Are there other applications for this, for non-point source pollution? And I will take my answer off the air, if that's okay.
Okay, a couple of questions there for you.
Yeah, the first piece about design efficiency, I think there's a lot of different ways for me to interpret that question on its own, but I'll take it from the perspective of as a company have scaled this from a small scale going to a larger scale. We're looking constantly at how we can find the right size of the technology for the right cost. So everything as we scale is about maintaining performance while improving cost efficiency. And so when there are utilities who are looking to bring new technologies into their existing infrastructure, or they're looking for ways to maybe address a need for excess capacity, which is caused by this, you know, these wet weather concerns, they'll look at technologies like ours to see, is this really compatible with our existing infrastructure? And it gives us also a chance to say, well, we can modify certain aspects of the design to be more efficient, whether it's for space, for performance, for energy. It gives us a chance to have that conversation around what your commodity is. Some utilities have commodity around energy. Some are just have no space. And so they're looking for different ways to maximize the existing footprint that they have. And that's where our technology really comes in. And then obviously performance, we will never sacrifice that at the end. So we're always looking at understanding what the commodities are. The question about non-point source pollution is really fascinating. And it is a big concern, especially for states like Wisconsin that have such a vibrant, wonderful river network. You know, we are very, very active on our rivers in Wisconsin. And so being able to continue recreating is important. But when they're non-point source, which as Matt described, as sort of whatever kind of comes and runs off into a body of water, it's difficult if you can't capture all that in one location and direct it through a pipe to treatment system. But I think the two points to that are important is something we talk often about is one of the best ways to eliminate pollution is to not generate in the first place. So a lot of that comes down to us as consumers and as individuals to keep what we can out of our waterways or off of our pavements that might otherwise wind up at a non-point or contribute to non-point source pollution. And there's a lot of monitoring that's already being done in our rivers to understand at what point in the river might we start seeing some increases in pollution. And as soon as we can quantify and understand that aspect of it, we can take a look to understand, is there somewhere upstream of either the point source, non-point source itself, or the river where we could potentially be diverting flow to treat it or to put something in the river itself, or even just downstream before that recreation might occur or that interaction might occur. So it's a great point. Non-point source is challenging, and there's a couple different ways that we as consumers can look at it as individuals who exist in the same space with these resources so that we can have positive impacts.
And you've used this. You've had some pilot projects and so forth in Milwaukee itself, I believe, and at Marquette University.
Yeah, we've been working with the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District for years. So they were one of those initial partners in the industry university collaborative funded research back in 2015 to help them address their zero sewer overflow and zero basement backup goal. So we piloted the technology within the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District sewer shed out at a location where they have seen overflows in the past, where the infrastructure exists for these overflows to occur. So we had it out at that location for a year to see how remote treatment looks throughout all of the seasons. We were there when it was -5 out. We were there when it was 100 degrees out. We got snow, we got rain. We saw huge slugs of chloride come through after big snowfall events. And that really impacts how well treatment can occur when there's lots of chloride in the water. So being able to be out at a location where you're seeing all those different environmental conditions is really important for us to be able to validate the technology and kind of put it through a lot of different scenarios. And currently we're continuing to work with the sewerage district to demonstrate the technology at the South Shore Water Reclamation Facility in Oak Creek. So we've had our pilot system done there now for just shy of a year. And there are different types of wastewater. So wastewater out in the sewer shed, where you're actually pulling from a combined sewer, looks way different from wastewater that is at a centralized treatment facility. So it all just adds to the ability for us to continue looking at how different wastewaters, temperature, constituents of the water, how we can treat that in different scenarios. And we're currently looking and talking to utilities out on the West Coast who are seeing some huge fluctuations in their wastewater demand during different seasons, such as tourist season, when during the week they've got 5,000 people who live in town, and on the weekends they see upticks of 35,000 people. And that's a huge change in demand for infrastructure. So that's another way that we are deploying our technology.
Well, it's pretty cool. And if for people, how do people find out more about the technology? I'd love for people to be able to see that video, for example, but
Well, anyone can go to our website. It's rapidradicals.com. The video should be linked up there. You'll be able to get a little bit more information about the deployments that I've mentioned today. And if anyone wants to talk more about it or sees another opportunity to collaborate on a project or just talk about the beauty of water and wastewater infrastructure, they can contact me there. I spent my PhD on this work. I've spent the last 10 years of my career developing it. And I think it's a really important, it's the only thing that allows us to live in cities. And so for those of us who are urban dwellers and appreciate the kind of the beauty and culture of living in a city, it's important for all of us to be able to engage with our infrastructure, ask good questions, and find ways to positively contribute.
Paige Peters, our guest. Thank you, Paige. She is founder and chief technology officer of Rapid Radicals Technology. It was great to have her with us. And we've covered a lot today on the show. Thank you so much for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mueller.